It is Monday, the 23rd of July. I'm Bill Benneke, and I have a guest today. We have a discussion ahead.
And now, here's Bill Benneke.
Talk about unclear on the concept. Totally unclear on the concept. Wrap your mind around what I saw today. On the way to work, a Volvo lowrider.
This is Talk is Cheap. With Bill Benneke. The Friends and Neighbors Network.
Most smokehouse barbecue has been knocking them out of the park over and over with their award-winning baby back ribs to their pulled pork, chicken, and shredded beef, tri-tip, and Louisiana hot link sandwiches. How about a salad, six kinds, maybe one of four burgers or a chicken job, either sandwich or a half a bird. Most has an enormous selection of sides from beans, tater salad, fries, O-rings, and the list goes on and on. Kids menu, soda pop, brewskis by the pitcher, Moe's in Slowtown and at the beach in Pismo. You'll be saying, Moe barbecue, please.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
No one chooses to be sick or injured, but you can choose where to get help. Take MR imaging, for example. San Luis Diagnostic Center now offers their brand new 3-Tesla Ultra High Field Open MRI, the only system of its kind in California and one of three in the United States. If you're claustrophobic, it's not a problem. With their new Siemens Skyra scanner, it has the largest opening available. Plus, it has the best quality images and shortest scan times. That's right. Shortest scan times, largest capacity opening, and image quality unequaled by any other scanner. San Luis Diagnostic Center is dedicated to providing state-of-the-art technology. So when you need an MRI, take control of your health care. Ask your doctor to send you to San Luis Diagnostic Center for their ultra-high-field, state-of-the-art open magnet. The choice is yours. Call 542-9700. All major insurances accepted.
542-9700 right there. All right. Let's do our highlight in history according to the Tribune, our flashback and whatnot. Our highlight in history on July 23rd in 1962, the first public TV transmission over Telstar 1 took place during a special program featuring live shots beamed from the United States to Europe and vice versa. On this, I don't know what they were shots of. On this date, 1967, a week of deadly race-related rioting that claimed 43 lives erupted in Detroit. In 1986, Britain's Prince Andrew married Sarah Ferguson at Westminster Abbey in London. A couple divorced in 1996. Holy dump truck. Okay, we got the birthdays. You ready? You got a few minutes? Here we go. Actress Gloria DeHaven is 87. Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy is 76. Actor Ronnie Cox is 74. Radio personality Don Imus is 72. Rock singer David Essex is 65. Actor Larry Minetti is 65. Actress Belinda Montgomery is 62. Actor Woody Harrelson is 51. Actor Eric LaSalle is 50. Rock musician Slash is 47. Actor Fillmore Sullivan, Philip Seymour Hoffman is 45. Country singer Alison Krauss is 41. Actor comedian Marion Wayans is 40. Country singer Shannon Brown is 39. Former White House intern Monica Lewinsky is 39. And actress Stephanie March is 38. And actor Daniel Radcliffe is 23 today. So that's pretty much everybody in the whole wide world except for me and my guests today. So happy birthday to them and happy birthday to you if it's yours.
Happy birthday to you.
It's your call, and the smartest one you can make is to Coastal Computers. There isn't another group of 10 people more dedicated to helping their clients get the most out of their business computers. Dedicated pros who enjoy helping people with their computers. They love making small business networks network and making the whole mess seem simple. Coastal Computers is here for the small business that needs computers and technology just to stay even and be competitive. They're here for the small business that can't afford to hire a computer staff. It doesn't matter whether price is your first concern or your last. Service is Coastal Computers' first concern, and that includes making your operation painless and highly successful. Coastal Computers is known for making the tough stuff easy. They've been doing it for over 25 years with lots of happy clients. They're certainly the real deal and worth a call. Coastal Computers, Microsoft, Intel, and networking specialists. Call 543-9047 or visit ccslo.com right now.
And I have another salutation today that I need to wish my wife a very happy anniversary.
trouble, that's what you do. All the morning sun and all its glory graces day with hope and comfort too. And you fill my life with laughter. You can make it better. If my troubles, that's what you do. Cause love is divine, and it judges mine like the sun. At the end of the day, we should give thanks and pray to the one. Have I told you lately that I love you? Have I told you there's no one above you? Fill my heart with gladness. Take away my sadness. Ease my troubles, that's what you do.
Get down when shots go off. Hi, Bill Benica. This is Talk is Cheap, your friends and neighbors network on 1340 KYNS. And today we're going to discuss what everybody else is discussing today all across the United States and probably in Europe and everywhere else. And that's the tale of James Holmes and the terrible tragedy in Aurora, Colorado. And I wanted to talk about the gun situation. I wanted to see if we could make any rhyme or reason out of what could really, realistically, is there any way to change anything that wouldn't do anything? I'm not sure there is. I've invited a couple of people in here, but Mike luckily showed up for me, my friend Mike, and it's from Atascadero. And so we're going to have a roundhouse discussion between two people. That works, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. And this is not – the idea here is not to be entrenched in I'm either against guns or for guns or whatever the thing is, the Second Amendment. It's not it, – this is not what this – I want this discussion to be. I want it to be what seems to be very obvious to us, what we think could possibly be any changes that could be made. And not laws necessarily, but maybe laws. Although, you know, everybody will tell you, well, we got too many laws now. I once again apologize. This would be a wonderful day to have the phone working, but I have a single person in the city of San Luis Obispo that could ruin my life, and I'm not going to have it. So, and we'll try. So we'll just talk between us, and then you can talk with people after we talk about things and see what you think of, too. First, thanks, Mike, for coming in.
Oh, no problem, Billy.
All right. I have James Holmes. He was, oh, matter of fact, let me see if this thing will play for me. I always say it that way because I'm embarrassed, but that's how I'm going to say it and hope that it works. But we have, this is his arraignment. If I can find it. This is his arraignment. Right here. And so we'll let this thing load. There may be a commercial before it actually plays, but we'll let this thing load and we'll find out what they had to say about that. So let's first go to his arraignment today in Colorado. Or not.
What it can, or what it could be, because this is what it is. Get it how you live. I'm from
the hood. This is actually a commercial, I think.
Kill me. A lot of companies might answer or no comment. Then there's eSurance, born online, raised by technology, and majors in efficiency. So whatever they save, you save. Hassle, time, paperwork, hair tearing out, and yes, especially dollars. eSurance, insurance for the modern world. Click or call.
Call People versus James Holmes, 12 CR 1522. Appearances, please.
Your Honor, Kara Pearson, Jacob Edson, Andrew Spears, Richard Orman, and Carol Chambers on behalf of the people.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. Daniel King, D-A-N-I-E-L-K-I-N-G, and Tamara Brady, T-A-M-A-R-A-B.
You at no cost to yourself. Any plea you make must be voluntary, not the result of any undue influence or coercion. Typically, you have a right to be advised of the charges. You have a right to be advised of the charges. The duty judge has made a preliminary determination of probable cause to believe you're committed the offense of first-degree murder, which is a Class 1 felony under Colorado law. Ordinarily, individuals are entitled to bail. Given the nature of the charges, you are currently being held on a no-bond hold. You also have a right to have a jury trial and preliminary hearing to determine whether there's probable cause to believe that you're the person that committed the offense. Mr. Holmes, do you have any questions about that initial advisement?
Okay. Trying to give you an idea of what it looked like. I mean, he's just he's kind of looking around and looking down a lot, and, you know, it doesn't look like all the lights are on in anybody's home there, but I'm not sure. Now, he's dyed his hair orange, and this was part of this, I guess, the Joker persona thing that he did to go into the theater. As a guess, I'm going to say, but I could be totally wrong. I'm going to offer one thought. He actually went into the theater, and while the people were coming into the theater, when the movie started, he went over to the exit door and propped it open. Now, perhaps he was less noticeable as a threat to anybody because he was in that, you know, attire, and so they didn't think that much of it. Then I take it, did he go back outside and then come in?
Yeah, he went outside and got the weapons.
Got the weapons and came back in. Okay, so there's a lot of curiosity about this guy, you know, besides the fact that he's been this terrible thing that he did. He told the cops that there was a booby trap in his car, and there wasn't. He also told the cops, and we don't know why, that there was a booby trap in his apartment, and there certainly was. And so they've disarmed that since, and it was, they said, very sophisticated and would have killed whoever came through the door first. And
it would have cut the person in half.
Yeah, but I don't know. I'm not sure. This guy's noodle. I don't know why he would have told anybody that he had that.
Yeah, that was, and it's kind of, you don't know if he's playing up the insanity plea or whatever, because first off, they was making the comment about not being taken alive and then not giving any resistance when they did find
I think he obviously changed his mind because he was dressed up to do battle.
Right.
Kind of like that robbery of B of A down in L.A.
Yeah, he had the Kevlar and the whole bit, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And the saving grace was his gun jammed, and he had no knowledge or ability to figure out how to unjam it.
Right.
You know, and thank goodness for that.
Well, the one that jammed had 100 rounds in it. It was the rifle he had.
Yeah. This was the one thing that kind of got the only one who flagged his kind of attitude, whatever, was somebody that was the owner of a gun club he tried to join. And he filled out application and stuff, and then the owner of the gun club calls his answering machine, and he had some kind of a bizarre, you know, answer to his message on his answering machine. And so the gun club owner, you know, wrote this down and stuff and said, well, if you want to come in for an interview, do so at such and such time. And he never responded to that.
Was this for a job at the gun club?
No. Just this was to join the gun club. Yeah, it's a private gun club, and this was to join it and stuff. And I guess that we're very lucky, and the city of Aurora is very lucky that he didn't, because he might have been able to figure out how to, you know, disassemble a weapon and put it back together. And the
or at least unjam weapon.
Right.
Here's a... this is the thing that's so amazing about this, and there's so many amazing parts of this thing. And here we're sitting here, and you're saying, okay, is the guy crazy? Is this an insanity defense? Of course they're going to offer that, but at the same time, a sane person doesn't do this.
Right, and to a certain extent, you're saying, yes, he is insane, but calculating and the whole bit, there should be a different way of deciding that just because of the fact of what you do is so far out of the norm that you're insane. But the fact that you were able to calculate it over a month's period,
right.
And all the different things that you came up with, and obviously he must have thought about the fact of, you know, that he'd like to have taken other people and stuff with him. I mean, there was 10 gallons of gasoline at his hotel room.
Right.
There were secondary booby traps and stuff like that. There were some things, like you said, that were so sophisticated that they were able to not disarm them. They had to explode them out of the area,
right. But
they were able to take them out without them being exploded. So, you know, this guy obviously had and the reason I'm saying this guy, suspect, as the governor has said, you know, when he was talking about him, is because maybe that's all he wanted, was to be known. I mean, now 2/3 of America and Lord knows how much of the world knows his name and his face.
Yeah.
And maybe that was what he wanted.
Let's talk about... he had a shotgun, a rifle, a semi-automatic rifle, and two pistols, from what I understand.
Yeah.
Let me say something else, if I may. I just want people, because here you hear about these people that were wounded. These, you're talking about serious, serious wounds these people must have, because, you know, every weapon that he had would inflict very serious damage.
Right.
And so it's not like, you know, you get, like you see the guys in the movies that get grazed in the shoulder. No, these are serious, serious wounds.
Well, there's a few people that are wounded that were in the adjoining theater.
Right. I'm not sure. I don't know. The people that are considered critical, I when you have wounds like this, I mean, you can fix people. I mean, they do it to soldiers all the time, but it's really...
There's a lot of doubt.
Yeah.
Right.
There's a lot of doubt about who's going to make it.
Right.
All right, let's talk about... Now, let me start off with this thing. Let me talk about the guns and something that needs to be clarified, because it's the term is used and it's wrong. I'm not trying to flower this thing, you know. I'm just letting you know that it's not an assault weapon. It's a semi-automatic rifle that is designed to look like a military rifle.
Right.
Now, interestingly enough, in the Big Five ad over the weekend, they had the exact same gun with an orange tip on it. It's called an airsoft. And they shoot plastic pellets, and people put on helmets, and they shoot each other with these guns because they, you know, they only do enough to sting. So that's not an assault weapon. It shoots plastic pellets. But, and so the gun that he had is not an assault weapon either. An assault weapon would be defined as an automatic weapon.
Right.
It's just a semi-automatic weapon. Now, we need to have a discussion and start to go into this direction about, you know, what do you do about semi-automatic weapons? You know, this kind of thing, it's like the genie's out of the bottle, and you're going to try to push it back in. And you almost can't. I mean, you know, technology has been around forever. You know, it started, well, semi-automatic guns, actually, lever-action rifles could be made, like the Rifleman. It could actually be modified to work as a semi-automatic gun. So it goes all the way back to the Winchester rifles, really.
Right.
And there, now, Washington, D.C., does not allow rifles. I'm sorry. Handguns. They don't allow handguns, and they don't allow semi-automatic weapons. But look how much damage Lee Harvey Oswald did in 10 seconds,
right,
with a bolt-action rifle.
Right.
You know, and the other thing too is, I think we have to deal with this reality. If someone said, if they somehow they took away everybody's civil rights, all every one of them, and said, okay, we're going to go house to house and we're going to confiscate every gun we can find, there'll still be some that are going to be out there. And if somebody is intent on using one, they'll be intent on using one.
And feel a lot more at ease with the fact of that.
Right.
They're saying that the suspect, when he went in there, obviously he knew no one in that theater would have a firearm.
Right.
And Colorado, since Columbine, has among the hardest,
laws
yeah. of getting firearms
right.
in any state. So, you know, you're looking at some place like Arizona, where it's very easy to become. In fact, there are lots of complaints, and there are a lot of people that when they want to politicize it, point to Arizona that there are over 300. Gun dealers in the area. Well, the fact is, I could become a gun dealer in Arizona if I live there for more than a year just by applying, and all that means is that I purchase more than 6 guns in a year. So there are a lot of collectors that are considered gun dealers, and they don't buy and sell, they just collect.
Well, the other thing, too, we have to recognize, I think, and it just makes sense to recognize it, is we are now so flooded with guns in this country and other countries to the south of us and to the north of us. We're so completely overwhelmed with weaponry at this point that to say, well, let's get some laws together that are going to work, I don't know what laws they would be. There's just too many guns.
Right.
There's just, if they outlawed guns and said you can't have them, but they didn't confiscate them, people would keep them.
Sure.
I mean, it's. I would wonder, percentage-wise, of all the guns that are out there in the United States. And I'm talking about private citizens and, you know, upstanding people, and they vote and they do and say the Pledge of Allegiance, all that. I wonder how many people have unregistered guns.
Oh yeah.
You know, I would bet more people have unregistered guns than have registered guns.
Yes.
You know,
because registered guns is a recent.
Well, yeah, relatively recent thing. Yeah. So, And know that, you know, the gun thing, you have to kind of come to grips with the idea of how far back you can go. I have a .22 that was made in 1897, and it's a gallery gun. It was made for a shooting gallery at a carnival, and so you only shoot what was called .22 shorts. They're lethal, and if you get a .22 hollow point short, it's twice as lethal.
Right.
So it just goes to show in that way, it doesn't matter how old it is or what little caliber it is or whatever.
Right.
You know, it can still do horrific damage if that's what someone chooses to do it. Now, we'll get to – I got an article here that's kind of interesting, and we'll go over some of it and some of the facts that they had to say about, you know, when you have more – they talk about these three things, and I think this is really very important. We're going to talk about guns. It's called facts, myths, and statistics. And they say there's three things. Murder can be broken down to three components: desire, ability, and feasibility. And those are the three things that are necessary for murder. It's kind of like the three things you have to have for a lottery.
Right.
Okay, so we'll talk about more about that, and you know how do guns aid that, And again, we'll see if we can come up with any ideas in the whole wide world about what you can do different. But I'm going to have to start with the premise that there's so many of them now. I don't know how you could stem the tide. I don't know what you could do to make a law that would make any sense whatsoever. If you just said, well, you're never allowed to brandish a firearm in public, so what? You know, the people that right. a guy like this that says, okay, I'm going to go kill a bunch of people is going to go kill a bunch of people.
Right.
You know, it's really, I mean, it's desperately sad.
And it's sad to think about, but you think in Norway, remember the guy that went to the island
right,
there?
Okay. Right.
They have among the most strict gun laws in the world, and yet he got that. And then he figured out that he was going to go to an island that was a retreat where he knew no one would have weapons against him. And he had a long time to go out there and be on his killing spree. You know, so if somebody wants it bad enough, if somebody for whatever reason in their screwball mind and their logic and whatever it might be, they decide they will get the gun, they will make a gun, they will figure out how to get the firearm or the ammunition, whatever it takes to do the destruction.
Yeah. And let me say something else, too. First, I had one thought, and then I said, Bill, I slapped myself and said, get real, Bill. You know, there was a minister that was shot, wounded, and he was laying right at this guy's feet. He said his foot was actually against his head. So I thought to myself, that guy probably had the best chance of anybody to stop it.
Right.
But let me say something to you. You know, been there, done that. When you're wounded, you know, there's tear gas all over the place, which I will try to figure out how he gets hold of that. But, you know, your instinct is to do exactly what he did, say as still as you possibly can and hope the guy doesn't try to shoot you again.
Yeah.
And that's the true reality. You can ponder all these things that, you know, all the brave things you see on movies and TV and all that. It doesn't work that way when your life's on the line, I tell you. It just doesn't work that way. We're going to take a break and then come back and we'll have more talk. We want to, I want to thank Mike from Atascadero for being with me today. I think what I'll do is, I think going into this break, I'll read Ann Calhoun's Canons that she put out on Saturday. She quotes a person, I think it's Joan Didion, I think is how you say her name, or Didion. And her quote is, "We forget all too soon the things we thought we could never forget. It's all Hollywood now, nothing but damn sequels. Columbine, Virginia Tech, Luby's Cafeteria in Texas, 23 were taken out there. You forgot that one, didn't you? Congresswoman Giffords, Fort Hood, now Aurora, Colorado. Here we go again, another damn summer sequel. Same assault weapons, same high-fire, large magazine, cop killer handguns, same angry, crazy guys, same dead people, same floor washing blood and bullets, same ritual of faux cries of shock and outrage, some 24/7 cathartic TV coverage, great for the ratings, and always the same hack dialogue, the sad face. Polls ask us to pray for the families of all the dead people, the excited shock survivors declaring how grateful they are that God was looking out for them anyway. Then comes the brain calls for better gun control and the same old question, why do we allow the country to be awash in the weapons of war? Of course, there is never a serious answer to that question, but it has to be asked. Like in old war movies, you just know the guy who pulls out the photo of his family will be the next guy to die. It's a cliche, but it just has to be in the script. Yes, it's all hackneyed formula, but the AK-47 question is needed to segue to the NRA and its totally and wholly owned congresspeople who trot on stage to claim their battle cry, guns don't kill people, people kill people. This is followed by talk radio voices from the heartland who declare that if all these people attending that Batman movie had been carrying weapons of their own, the shooter would have been taken out in a matter of seconds, which is even more blood fantasy. The Hollywood vision of a theater filled with highly trained snipers, our very own American leather stockings who can shoot the eye out of a squirrel in a tree on a hill 6 miles away and do that even a dark theater filled with tear gas and chaos is insane. That's a script that regularly plays out in the heads of so many of our out-of-shape middle-aged American males who have been watching too many Liam Neeson movies. Yes, folks, another American comic kabuki theater of blood with a script as preordained as a Noah theater piece. It never changes. It's always damn sequels now, but we never get tired of the reruns. Not Americans, like little children who want mommy to read the same story over and over and over again. We can't get enough of this particular story. Big guns, lots of big guns. We love those. And Rambo, Bruce Willis falling down, yippee-ki-yay. guys who doles out rough justice and all those people who've done us wrong. We love that guy. He's our contemporary Deerslayer, once described by that sniffy Englishman, D.H. Lawrence, as a man who kept his moral integrity hard and intact, an isolated, almost selfless, stoic, enduring man who lives by death, by killing, but is pure white. Yep, that's our secret inner vision. Every man armed out there on the edge of the Indian-infested wilderness, stoic, a killer, give us AK-47s or give us death. And the violence, we love that too. We need the killing like a cokehead needs that spoon up his nose. Then another and another, we just can't seem to get enough. We're a culture filled with anger, paranoia, and fear, addicted to the pornography of violence, living on the rage and adrenaline. Faster, pussycat, kill, kill. In a sane world, the state of affairs would cause despair in a normal person, our prompt, serious evaluation of the culture, or even an intervention, but despair and questions and interventions only function if there's hope that things can change. Since things will never change here, despair is pointless. So are the questions. And things will never change because the sad truth is this. Americans love their guns more and they love their children, and more than they love their friends and neighbors, more than they love their fellow citizens, more than they love even themselves. Since that's the case, the only sane response is laughter. Silly us. We've turned ourselves into a bloody rerun of a bad movie that's now on a constant replay loop. Whack-a-mole and we're the moles. Of course, in a sane world, America would be declared insane and locked up in a mental hospital to keep her from doing harm to herself and others and be given treatment to restore her health. Sadly, this isn't going to happen because we do not live in a sane world. So grab your car keys. I hear there's a gun sale at Walmart, and it's time to stock up. Don't let someone throw you a curveball when choosing who to see for hearing help. There are plenty of dispensers and strange devices out there. Dr. Karen Scott, Doctor of Audiology, has the years of experience, education, and can help you with the best decisions for you, your children, grandpa and grandma, and all those betwixt and between. With Dr. Karen's line of professionals, your experience with them will be a bases loaded, out-of-the-park home run. Dr. Karen Scott, the LA Dodgers, and KYNS. What a fantastic lineup. Dr. Karen Scott's office is in the three-story glass Walther building next to the DMV on South Higuera. Come in soon.
Lenny's been pretty upset with the Dodgers this year, and he's thinking about switching teams. Hi, this is Michael Morin from Morin Brothers Automotive with Lenny and Gertie, the diagnostic duo. If your car is reaching the end of its career and you're thinking of switching to a newer model, give us a call at Morin Brothers before you buy, especially if you're looking for a used car. We can recommend the right car for you and check out a used car before you buy. If you're going to pick a losing team, you want to pick one you love.
Call Morin Brothers Automotive at 541-2407. Look for the building with the green metal wolf.
Hi, I'm Michael, manager of the Natural Foods Co-op in San Luis Obispo. We are a non-corporate, community-owned grocery store that offers a healthy, alternative place to shop. At the Natural Foods Co-op, you'll find local organic produce and local pasture-raised meats, as well as organic grocery and bulk items. We have a large supplement section, as well as a bulk herb department with over 250 items. In the 37 years we've been in business, our goal has been to provide high-quality, healthy foods and supplements at the lowest prices possible. We have a friendly, knowledgeable staff that can help you with all your questions. Co-op members enjoy a discount at the register and better prices on special orders. However, we are open to the public and a membership is not required. Shop. Come by and check us out at 745 Francis Avenue, right off Broad Street in San Luis Obispo, or give us a call at 544-7928. We're open Monday through Saturday, 9 to 7, closed on Sundays. Mention this ad and we'll give you a free t-shirt with your groceries. Natural Foods Co-op of San Luis Obispo. Everyone can shop, anyone can join.
Caught in a landslide, no escape from reality. Open your eyes, look up to the skies and see.
I'm just a cool boy, I need no sympathy.
Because I'm easy come, easy go. Little high, little low.
Any way the wind blows
doesn't really matter to me.
To me. Mama just killed a man, put a gun against my trigger, now he's dead. Mama, life had just begun, but now I've gone and thrown it all away. Mama,
Scaramouche, will you do the fandango? Thunderbolt and lightning, very, very frightening me.
Galileo, Galileo,
Galileo, Galileo
Figaro.
Magnifico! I'm just a poor boy, and nobody loves me.
He's just a poor boy from a poor family, sparing his life from this monstrosity.
Let me go.
Bismillah. No, we will not let you go.
Let him go.
Bismillah. We will not let you go.
Let him go.
Bismillah. We will not let you go.
Let me go.
We'll not let you go.
Let me go.
We'll not let you go.
Let me go.
Oh, mamma mia, mamma mia.
Mamma mia, let me go. Beelzebub has a devil put aside for me. For me.
The song from Queen, Bohemian Rhapsody, and the words tell it all right there. We don't know if this man, James Holmes, regrets anything at this point. We don't have the faintest idea. We can only hope that he does, but we don't know, and I don't know what hoping it does anything either. And with Mike today from Atascadero, and we're just talking about guns and things, you know, murder and things that are happening in our society. There are people that say that there have been studies done, but it makes sense to me, if nobody had ever said there was a study done, that the more you engage in violent behavior, which is video games, paintball guns, airsoft guns, the more you involve yourself in that, the more I think we are prone to violence. I just think it's a reality.
I don't know if we're prone to it, Bill, or if we just accept it. You know,
maybe that's the right term. Maybe we accept the violence more.
Yeah.
The other thing too is and it's a good thing we're like this, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to function. And that is, you know, and here they interview people, and if somebody had put a microphone in my face, first off I'd say get the microphone out of my face. But let's say I was going to make a comment. So here they were interviewing people at other theaters, the Batman movie. They're interviewing other people, and they're going, "Well, are you afraid at all?" "Oh no, I don't. Stuff like that bother me. I'm tough." It's not that at all. You're not tough. It's the fact, because the moment somebody starts shooting that street, I bet you're going to find out you can eat cement.
Mm-hmm.
It's the matter of we deliberately say, our brains say, that happened somewhere else.
Right.
It happened to someone else. Otherwise, if somehow it just overwhelmed us, it would overwhelm us.
Right. One thing that they said, the ignorance of youth. I mean, there were things that I did as a kid that, looking at now, I'm thinking, how did I survive that?
Yeah, really.
You know, that
yeah.
kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But that is, you never think, you know, I went places I shouldn't have. I did things I shouldn't have. I saw people I shouldn't have. You know, a lot of different things. And it's just that when you're young and ignorant of the fact or just don't think that you're, you know, you think you're bulletproof. You think that that kind of stuff is never going to happen to you. As we get older and when things do occur to us, you know, it takes us much longer to heal up from something, things along that line. I think that that becomes a lot more in your mind. You start thinking about, I'm not going in there.
Right.
I'm not going to do that. And like you said, you're the first one that you see something come out that you're ducking, that you're, you know.
But here's the interesting thing, and Nancy's always been sort of surprised. If there's something wrong, I see something, or an accident or something, I run towards it. I do. But that, I'm going to have to tell you honestly, and then the Marines have an ad now, which way would you run?
Right.
Well, military training, that's what it's about. It's to train you to go the wrong direction.
Well, it's the same way with firemen, with police officers.
Sure.
You know, that they just, the reaction is you go to where the noise is being made.
And try to stop it, you know.
Right, yeah. instead of running away.
But that's a whole together different thing, though, than people that are unarmed sitting in a movie theater and some guy's got a gun.
Right.
It's a whole other world. Now, the other thing, and I certainly wouldn't get into this discussion all because I don't believe it should be discussed. I think it's stupid. You have people say, why was a six-year-old who was killed? Why was a six-year-old at the movie theater? Because the parents thought the six-year-old could see the movie and they took him.
Right.
We didn't used to have midnight movies, remember? We didn't used to have midnight movies. But we do now. And so you had an infant. One lady had an infant there. A couple had an infant there. Well, if they don't have, you know how much it costs to get a babysitter and go to the movie these days? I mean, you have to be rich. So they apparently weren't rich, so they took the baby. And as long as the baby's not crying, then who cares? It sleeps through it. It doesn't sit there and watch Batman and go, I'm pretty young to watch this, aren't I, Dan?
Yeah, there's the old thing, you know, hindsight is always 20/20.
Right, and, you know, and who expects ever anybody who expects to have a guy with guns walk in and start shooting everybody? Now, the tear gas thing, maybe I'm just stupid. I didn't know that you could just go buy tear gas. Can you?
No, I think that there's the possibility that he did get it from, you know, like...
On the internet?
On the internet or something. But there is also the possibility that, like the bombs and traps that he made, that he created it himself. Because from what I heard, there are several sites where it teaches you how to make tear gas bombs. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, so... And when they were saying, you know, afterwards that people actually had burns on them from the tear gas, it sounds like that it might have been homemade because of the fact that that usually means that the chemicals were a little bit stronger mixed.
Well, that or they were also, most people that are exposed to tear gas don't get burned by it.
No.
You know, I mean, if you just hold the grenade upside down,
yeah.
You know, from the smoke, from the smoking end. And if you've never been, hopefully you've never been exposed to tear gas, the next notch up from tear gas, the worst is called CS gas. And in the military, before we went to Vietnam, we had to go into a room full of CS gas. And they just wanted you to realize that if you see that, you're going to be totally debilitated. You know, you're not going to be shooting, you're not going to be doing anything except trying to get some air and try to figure out how to keep the burning from your face and your lungs and your nose and your eyes. Mm-hmm. And so when they talked about, you know, people sit there and think, you know, and I understand what Ann was saying, her thing, you know, you get the fat middle-aged people like Mikey and I that sit there and go, oh, I could have got that sun gun, you know. No. It was total chaos in that place. And everybody's running, screaming, trying to get out, trying to get away from the guy. I mean, there was no act of heroism that could have even possibly taken place. Even if you tried, you would have been shot.
Yeah. The freak thing is that, like I said, luckily his gun jammed because he had the possibilities of doing a lot worse than what he did. In fact, the good thing is that the response was so rapid because there were police officers around figuring that there were going to be big crowds because of the midnight showing, you know. Everybody now, the latest craze is wanting to be the first to see the new movie, the new whatever it might be, you know. The big thing, I know that there's a lot of people that are looking in hindsight, how was he able to get this stuff? Why didn't, you know, especially with the response from his mother, right when she was informed that happened, and that they had arrested her son, and they wanted to know what she said, you know, what she felt, and she said that she was sure that they had got the right person. And something must have, in her mind, said that my son was capable of doing that. Yeah. And the sad thing is, until we're able to find whatever gene, whatever thing that it is in a person's makeup that allows them to do that, we're never going to stop this and stay an open society.
Absolutely. And the other thing is, I mean, we look at the how many people amended for the longest time, and now we're so used to it, I don't think we give it a second thought unless you hear about somebody that groped somebody from the TSA.
Right.
But, you know, do you remember going on an airport not having to be looked at by anybody?
Right.
I mean, you know, but this has now become part and parcel to our world. I heard a comment, somebody said our theater's going to have, you know, metal detectors to be able to go into a movie from the future. Yeah. Hopefully not.
No.
Hopefully not.
When we look at the, we've got just 230 million people in the United States, and just a handful of screwballs. Look at how much, how many rights, how much stuff that we have lost because of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the innocence that's gone forever. I mean, I would have no more thought of letting my son go 5 miles by himself, or even a few blocks, to go to the nearest playground without me or somebody watching over him when he was raised, you know. And he's 22 years old now, and I still think about a lot of things that he does or wants to do that stick into my mind, because he doesn't think that the things that could happen would ever happen to him. I mean, he's a very intelligent person. He's well aware of his surroundings. And even so, a lot of these people that were at the theater are the exact same person.
Yeah.
And if that happened, what could he have done? Nothing. Like you said, you know, a person against a bullet, a person against a bomb, a person against anything along that line, the other person's going to win.
They have the expression, which I've never understood, the wrong place at the wrong time.
Right.
It would seem to me it's the wrong place at the right time.
Yeah.
But whatever it is. So, you know, this is the thing. We can, and we'll talk more about other things about, you know, let's say they said, okay, from now, it's like the two-tiered system they're using for retirees now from county and city governments, you know, saying, okay, we can go backwards and do something, or we can go forwards from here and do something different. So they go forwards from here and do something different, I suppose. Could be a possibility if they want to pass laws and say, okay, these are the kind of guns you can have and these are the kind of guns you can't have. The problem is, once again, is that we have a proliferation of so many guns out there now. It's insane. So, and I say that being a gun owner myself. I mean, I say that, but, you know, that I'm part of the problem, not part of the solution, I suppose, if that's the case.
Well, as long as you have the people that want to do something bad, they can with something. There was a, you know, the old, they used to call it the Matty Mattel gun, the AR-15, right? And there's a civilian version, which is a semi-automatic weapon. There is a piece that you can put into that that is, will take you about 2 minutes, if you know what you're doing, to put that in, that will make that gun a full automatic machine gun.
No doubt. I'm sure there is.
There are conversion kits to make a round, you know, because you're only allowed 15 rounds, that you can make a drum thing of 150 rounds. And I could do that easily in a day's time. So if a person wants to bad enough, to be screwball enough, to take other lives with them, or just to show that they can do it, they'll be able to do it.
There was a thing going around the internet, I know I sent it to you, about they're now checking, in other countries, they're checking for cell phones that are actually guns.
Cell phone guns.
Cell phone guns. It's like really spooky.
There was a gun over 25 years ago that was made out of plastic that was completely undetectable in any metal detectors, anything along that line. And even the bomb sniffing, as long as you did your ammunition correctly, it wouldn't be detectable. And they could easily smuggle these into planes. And the fact that I haven't seen any of these come on yet really surprises the heck out of me.
Yeah, well, this cell phone thing's a little bit spooky. It fires four, it carries four bullets, and you press a number underneath the thing, and boom, it goes. The kind of craziness right there. We'll get into a little discussion. You're going to have time to stay around a little bit?
Sure.
We're going to get into discussion next hour. We'll talk about some of the different kinds of guns, single action, double action, what they do, what they can't do, what they should do. They have in this article I came across what the feasibility of committing a crime. And they talk about with weapons like knives or clubs, a would-be murderer faces enormous personal risk and the reasons that they do. A gun, however, dramatically reduces all of those risks because guns allow altogether different things to happen. So this is just a thought on handguns. You know, as you know, in China, they were having a problem for, I mean, like, you kept hearing about stabbings.
Yeah.
In China, we don't have guns, but they heard about stabbings. The only thing is, when you hear about a stabbing, you don't hear about a mass stabbing, usually. But we'll talk more about all these things and when we come back, Mike and Bill Benica, on Talk Is Cheap, your Friends and Neighbors Network.
I started out with a 410, then moved to a 20 gauge. Every squirrel and rabbit in Dallas County knew my name. I sat on the stand with Paw from the time I was 3 years old. When I was eight, I used a muzzle loader to kill my first doe. These days I go down to Walmart and they sell them in the back. Some people want to take them away. Why don't you go bust them for us at selling crack? Guns, whether Remingtons or Glocks. Come on, man, it ain't like I'm a slinging them on the block. Listen, son, as long as I'm alive and breathing, you won't take my guns. If there ever was a time we need them, I'd say it'd be today. When we're letting them terrorists watch cable TV and walk out of Guantanamo Bay. Just try to do the right thing and raise my family in this land. Treating me like you want to be treated, and that's what I call man. If we don't have them, what do we do? Tell me where we're gonna go. Somebody breaks into my house, I'm gonna need my Colt 45. Come on, man, it ain't like I'm a slangin' up on the fly.
not really have a guess either. I just came across that today. It was called Guns by Justin Moore. You're with Bill Backer, talking to Chief Friends and Neighbors Network, and Mike and I are talking about guns today, and we're talking, of course, about Aurora, Colorado, and about all things that are terrible. Hi, Mike. Welcome back.
Hey, Billy boy.
Well, here's an interesting thing. Let me read this. This is kind of fun. Let me read this to you. This is fun. Fun's not the right word. I'm sorry. This is interesting stuff from this thing I came across. All right, here's what they say. We're talking about the feasibility of committing a murder. That's the third component of what they were talking about. A person might have both the desire and the weapons needed to kill, but if the circumstances don't offer a feasible opportunity to carry it out, then a person will probably decide against it. With weapons like knives or clubs, a would-be murderer faces enormous personal risk, and here's why. Getting physically close to the victim might be impossible under a wide variety of circumstances. Getting close to the victim reduces the odds of surprise, secrecy, or anonymity. The intended victim might be taller or stronger. The intended victim might be surrounded by friends, family, or bodyguards. The victim might shout out for help. A crowd might come to the victim's rescue. In the ensuing struggle, the murderer might be seriously wounded or even killed. The struggle will probably leave telltale signs of blood, skin, or hair follicles on the murderer, and the intended victim might survive and testify against him. A gun, however, dramatically reduces all of those. Guns allow people to kill victims from afar, maintain a much greater element of surprise, secrecy, and anonymity, kill larger and stronger people, kill crowds, frighten away people who might otherwise help, assume almost no risk of injury from personal struggle, leave no telltale blood or other physical evidence on the murderer, and leave the victim less likely to survive or see him testify against him. So, again, it's, you know, why? What's the motivation behind using handguns? And that pretty much is it. Of course, in this, if we look at the circumstances, well, that's true. But we look at the circumstances here. Once again, here you have a situation as you did in Columbine, as you did in so many of these terrible things, where it's not a handgun, or maybe partly a handgun, yeah. But there's a rifle involved of some kind.
I think that there was one psychologist that I semi-agree with that says that using a firearm is semi-anonymous. It's not as personal as using a weapon like a club or a knife or, you know, something along that line. So a lot of times with the murder with a gun, it's that it's just to be, you know, dispassionate.
Mm-hmm. Well, once again, if we look at a military equation, this thing, you can shoot somebody, but unfortunately, people had to get into bayonet fights with somebody.
Right.
You know,
right.
And think how bizarre that would be.
I remember them saying that in World War II, and that was the hardest thing in World War II and in Vietnam, training a person to actually shoot someone that they could see. You know, that they could.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that you could. I can see your face. And for me to pull a trigger is just completely out of the norm for a normal person. And to get that out of a person was really difficult. Maybe the shooting games do that to a point where that realistic-looking character that you're shooting at in the video game is now, you know, anonymous with you.
So you become dispassionate about
right,
the whole
thing. Exactly.
Yeah, it's interesting. It really is. The other thing, too, is, and this is what's interesting, obviously the times we've had mass murders, it's a one-time affair. Luckily this time, because the guy gave up. But, or I don't think, I'm going to say he gave up. He had all the stuff on it. I didn't think he was going to give up. Anyway, yeah. But unlike, in war, what happens, two things happen. You become accustomed to it, you know.
Right.
You get used to doing it. And number two, a lot of times the motive really in the back of your mind is revenge because someone that you know has been killed and you're torqued off, you know. So it changes your whole mindset about, you know, using guns.
Well, the guy that the two guys, the older guy and the kid that were back shooting people at convenience stations and stuff like that. Okay, he said the first time was the hardest. After that, every pull of the trigger, it was easier and easier, and you started thinking more about what he was doing and how to calculate it and all these other things. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that that's a thing that people might have in them on occasion, but I think for the most part, it's kind of like what you've said about as a combat veteran, the people that hate war the most are the ones that have actually seen it up close and personal. And I think the scary thing is if we get that, you know, displacent feeling that some people are getting when it comes to death and shooting somebody.
But here's what they're saying. This is in this study they were saying, doing these studies here. It said like in this 20-year-old study of 800 children from grade 2 to early adulthood, Leonard F. Aron and Ronald Huseman found that the best predictor of later aggression was a heavy childhood diet of TV violence, with more so than poverty, grades, a single parent in the home, or exposure to racial violence, was the actual exposure to violence itself. And it's again, because when you talk to a guy that's a combat vet, they've had somebody shoot back.
Right.
You know, it changes the whole ball game.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're just going to go out, if you're going to play a video game, you know you're never going to die playing a video game, so you just keep going at it, going at it. Going at it. So, well, you do become, I think, dispassionate about it.
Right.
The person doesn't matter, plus the fact it's a game.
Right, but at the same time, if you look at the ones that were the mass shootings that we've had, the person was calculating enough to think that where they would go. I mean, we just had the one not too long ago at the Denny's, or
right here in Pismo.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that guy was pretty much assured that there wasn't going to be anybody in there that had a, you know, as long as somebody wasn't in a police uniform,
right,
that had a firearm to be able to go back at them.
Well, and so apparently one older guy did go after him, but that was
right
fatal to him.
Yeah.
Not to the perp. Here's another thing they say about ability. The second component of murder is ability. Killing a human being is a surprisingly difficult task, and that means that weapons with higher ability will kill in greater percentage of attempts. Among common weapons, of course, guns are unmatched for their killing ability, and this efficiency can be seen in attempted suicide stats on a national level. The statistics on suicide attempts and methods are sketchy, but there have been a number of more reliable, smaller studies. The following one from Dallas yields a typical result. It showed that suicide attempts with a gun are fatal 76% of the time compared to 4% with other methods used. The American Association of Suicidology, which I didn't know there was such a thing, has given a higher estimate. 92% of all suicide attempts with a gun are fatal. Gun researcher Josh Sugarman writes, unlike pills, gas, or razor blades, which are of limited effectiveness, guns are rarely forgiving, which is true.
Talking about that, I think that one of the things, too, that we look at, it's what the media plays up, you know. And I'm sorry to say that they make this guy out in some people's minds as some kind of a celebrity. You know, the we've got these reality shows. We've got people from Jersey that are celebrities for getting drunk and having sex with anybody that walks up to them. We have people that become celebrities just for their stupidity, not for anything good that they've done, not for anything else, and that it's a cheap format for a show, and their 15 minutes of fame becomes years of fame.
And this is what happens, in my opinion, this is what happens with network news. And that is they have to ask everybody about everything.
Exactly.
You know, and they have, as you said, 230 million people to do it with. Well, one less is in jail. But they have 230 million people to go ask, what do you think of this?
Right.
You know, it's absurd. I mean, and I think it does tend to provide people that are mentally unstable, if they see that they have a platform to become known, you know, the 15 minutes of fame thing, they'll take it.
How many people are going to say, in their mind, even if they don't verbally say it to somebody, I can be as famous as blank.
Right.
And that would be the way. I mean, if you want to look at it, we're just listening to the national news. 14 people died in Texas in a truck crash. You know, the fact that they're saying, oh, several could have been illegal. Who cares?
Yeah,
that's a lot 14
of people.
Died in one car accident. In Chicago, this year alone, up until this point, 274 people have been killed in Chicago. Okay, just this year, almost twice as many people commit suicide in the United States than are murdered in the United States. And yet, the media decides the impact it should be, that we should look at this guy's life from one end to the other and try to figure out. Let's think about those people that are committing suicide. Why?
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, and this is that's just murder in reverse, so to speak.
Yeah,
you know, really,
it is.
I mean,
but it's,
you know,
still a life taken,
right?
You know,
right. You know what's interesting too is you look at the fact that I mentioned Lee Harvey Oswald, who was an ex-Marine, and how accurate he was with a weapon from Europe. Yeah. But then you look at Timothy McVeigh, and he was so deluded. He somehow believed that by bombing that federal building and killing 68 people, that here he shared, he might have shared this passion with the other guy. What's the other guy's name? I forget. Anyway, the other guy, it doesn't matter. With his accomplice. They might have shared mutually the passion that there's something terribly wrong with our government and it has to be stopped.
Right.
Okay. Unfortunately, the man was so deluded he thought it went beyond the two of them. That everybody was sitting here waiting for somebody to bomb a federal building so we'd all take over the country or something.
Look
I don't
at
know
his
what
manifesto
yeah,
and,
yeah.
and start, you know, utopia.
He's,
yeah,
it is.
And that's what I'm saying, by as long as we have an open society, there are going to be screwballs like that that think that what they're doing is either good for them, for the country, for the world, for nature, for whatever it might be in their little pumpkin heads that they figure out. Yeah, but I remember the quote from Abraham Lincoln, and it has been repeated by three other presidents who were shot by Reagan, by Kennedy. That as long as we have a free society, anytime somebody wants bad enough to kill the president, they can. And he said, but he would rather have that way than to change our fundamental society that we have.
You know, part of me, Saturday, was kind of running through my mind. I was thinking, you know, let's say Washington, D.C. says you can't have automatic weapons. You can't have pistols. You can't have automatic weapons. That, it goes to at least to some distance in trying to stave off what can happen as far as a mass murder, but only to a certain degree. Because, once again, if you take a pump-action rifle, you know, you're talking about being able to shoot once every 2 seconds.
Right.
So if you can shoot once every half second as opposed to once every 2 seconds, I mean, you still do terrible
and
damage.
And if you're able to somehow smuggle it into a stadium where there's a football game going on, how many people do you think are going to die?
Oh, yeah. And the other thing, too, is, you know, so part of me was thinking, well, maybe if the rest of the country, like Washington, D.C., but not like Washington, D.C., let's say they allow pistols, to only allow single-action revolvers. But the people that actually do this quick-draw McGraw stuff, like you saw in the Westerns, that can fan the hammer,
yep.
They can actually do that.
Yep.
You know, and if you practice long enough, you could be very good at it.
There's a gentleman that was on television that was one of the fast... quick and accurately. He just pull it out and shoot it, but he can accurately hit what he wants to hit. And he can do the full six shots in less than 2 seconds.
I think I saw that.
Yeah.
I
couldn't believe it. And until they slowed it down, I thought that he had only shot a couple of times. But then you see the targets, they're all down, and you see the fact that, you know, in slow motion, that, yeah, boom, 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 boom. I mean, it's just like you would think in the old West.
Well, and the other thing, too, that makes life weird again is that you have, in some smaller caliber weapons, they have as many as 10 shots. They have cylinders. They have, you know, revolvers that have 10 shots. They have 10-shot magazines. cylinders. And so, you know, that right there you've got a problem. The one advantage to having single action revolvers is when you if you have to reload it, you can't do it fast.
Right.
You know, each chamber has to be done.
They have speed chambers that you can do that. There is a way I know because back when I used to target shoot down in LA and stuff like that, there were some guys that we used to shoot with and stuff, and these guys were really proficient. I mean, really proficient. One guy had an automatic weapon, and I won't say what it was or whatever, but it had 15 in the magazine, and he could shoot in less than a minute. He could shoot 45 shots in less than a minute.
Really?
Yeah, he was that quick at being able to drop his magazine, shove another one in there. I had another guy that with a Smith & Wesson, they used to call him the police gun, okay, and I've got one of these. This guy could shoot off about 20 shots in a little over a minute, just being able to quick load in, out, drop. I mean,
go,
he was unbelievable, yeah.
What to do? See, I think, and part of this discussion, I'm hoping what we understand of it is that there, without completely changing the way of life that we have, you know, and giving up on our Constitution and our Bill of Rights, without completely changing them, then, you know, there's going to be this kind of thing all the time. Even though you're supposed to wear a seatbelt, 14 people are just killed in a rollover accident of a truck.
Right.
You know, it's like you can try to do everything in the world to save people, but if there's something that's going to take their life, it's going to take their life.
The big thing is the mom. If she didn't have a surprise about that, why didn't she say something to someone that might have been able to help him out? You know, that's the big thing, because a week before or a few days before this guy did this, he was at a bar with somebody and they were talking football and the whole bit. And this guy thought, you know, just average Joe. And yet the one guy at the gun club is the only one, and he didn't push it beyond that.
Well, it was kind of like the 9/11 hijackers.
Right.
You know, that nobody thought it was weird that they didn't want to know how to take off or land. They just want to know how to fly. Now, one guy did, but he didn't act on it.
Well, he did,
oh,
but
he did
it wasn't carried
oh,
through.
Oh, okay. Nobody cared.
It was stopped, you know.
Local
and
level.
The fact that this agency couldn't speak to this agency and you know, and that kind of stuff, the paperwork died.
Right. Which is the concept of Homeland Security, I guess.
Right.
Is it,
right.
Know.
But even so, now, there's a lot of times where it'll stop down the line. It'll just go so far, and then that's it. And those type of things are the ones that, you know, that may be. I mean, we're not going to stop all of this. We never will, as long as there's a United States the way that it is now. But maybe we can eliminate a few of these screwballs.
Well, and the question becomes then, how do we better affect mental health care, you know, to extend it to people? You know, the VA is going out of their way now to really, really, really try to work with veterans. And not only the VA, there's also the U.S. government has opened up a whole other veteran program. And it's a vet program, but it has nothing to do with the VA. And so if I had to compare the two to tell you what they're like, the VA, the people I know that go to therapy with the VA, they talk about how do you feel today? You know, how do you feel today? Not, they don't do the war stories or anything. They just, how do you feel today? This new VA agency, and I talked to a guy that went there, and he said, it's very hard at first, but it really helps, is how did you feel then? You know, what did you go through? And
right.
All the people that are there. This is on Southwood Drive, by the way, if you're a vet. It's on Southwood Drive, right next to the YMCA. A brand new building. They were working on trailers for a while. And so the idea of saying of you're going to have to go back into a place you may not want to go, but they're going to try to say to you, you know, what is it you felt and what happened to you?
Right.
You know.
And, you know, if that stops
just one person.
Yeah, one person from committing suicide.
Right.
Or from doing a crazy act because of that. You know.
Because, and I have to tell you again, you know, the veteran thing is a thing to worry about. It really is, because you had people exposed to war. You have people that take life a whole different way. And they come back, and if they have PTSD, a lot of times with it comes rage and all kinds of other things that are just really bad. You know, and these are, there's a lot of time bombs out there with these men coming back. So they're trying to, with the men coming back from Afghanistan right now, they're trying to screen all of them. And, you know, have them like, at least talk to them, ask them some questions and stuff. I don't know what they trip you up with, but, you know, ask some questions.
Right. But, you know, how many of the guys just figure, hey, I just want to get the heck out of here.
Well, of course.
That they're going to slide through the system and stuff. The fact of having something to be able to, for them to fall back on, the unfortunate thing is there's going to be too many of them that don't want to fall back on it.
Well, and it also reminds me of, to be really honest with you, it reminds me of when we came back from Vietnam and landed at Travis Air Force Base, they had, we called the term the shaky jakes, and people would fall apart when they got off the airplane because they were in the United States and they touched down, it was Earth. You know? And so if you did fall apart, so to speak, then they'd put you in an infirmary for the night, you know, and calm you down and all that and send you home. But who the hell wanted to spend the night in an infirmary? And so I had a friend with me, Floyd, who had the shaky jakes anyway. And then when we got off that airplane, he was really not doing well. So I said, here, let's put our arms around each other like, you know, we're buddies coming back from war, and I'll try to hold you up and get you through the gauntlet. Because what they had was they had six doctors and nurses, three each, and you had to walk between them. And they would look at you and see if you looked like you were not doing good. So I held him up and smiled and said, make sure you smile, you know, everything's fine. And we got through it, but poor Floyd was having a terrible time.
Right, and that might have been the best thing or the worst thing for him.
And then I'll tell an aside here that's kind of cute. So I get on a bus. There was different buses, and Floyd was going. Oh, Floyd was picked up, that's why. So I was going to take a bus to the San Francisco airport. I get on this bus. I go toward the back of the bus, and the bus fills up, you know, with a lot of guys from Travis, you know, airmen, whatever it is, and the guys that are coming back from Vietnam. And then one lone female starts down the aisle of this bus. And I thought, whatever you do, don't sit next to me, because I haven't not said a swear word in one sentence in a whole year. You know, I haven't talked to a female in a year. I haven't looked at a female in a year. Please don't sit next to me. That's where she plops her butt, right there. Hi, how are you? And I said to her, I turned to her, I said, I have to tell you something. I haven't talked to a human being, you know, a normal human being, in 1 year. And I'm just going to look out this window on my way to the airport. Is that okay with you? She goes, oh, sure, that's fine. So I didn't say anything to her. I looked out the window the whole time. We're going to come back. We're going to take a break and come back. And you're listening to Bill Benica and Mike from Atascadero on Talk is Cheap, 1340 KYNS, your news station in San Luis Obispo. A while back, say about 50 years, Snow Whiten at Whiten's Heat and Air Conditioning in San Luis Obispo and her friends, the Seven Little Dudes, invented the GPS. They sure did. The GPS, great personal service. Before long, everybody expected their own GPS, but it wasn't guaranteed unless they called Snow Whiten at 781-2574. To this day, when you need great personal service on your heating, air conditioning, refrigeration, or you realize you have mucked up ducts and need help with a healthy air system, call Snow Whiten at 781-2574 and she'll dispatch a Texpert, spiggity spot, or even quicker. We needed help yesterday. Whiten's has been front and center since the early 50s, before the really cool cars, before Fidel's beard, or just about the time of I Like Ike buttons. How, you might ask curiously but politely, did Whiten's gain this stellar reputation? Hundreds of satisfied customers spread it by word of mouth, where most words come from. Keep the outside out and the inside in. Call Snow Whiten at 781-2574, and Whiten's GPS with heating, air, and refrigeration will help you live happily ever after.
the end.
For 125 years, Mercedes-Benz has produced the world's most advanced automobiles, and Star Automotive is dedicated to maintaining those vehicles for many years to come. Hi, this is Brian from Star Automotive. I wish to thank over 1,000 Mercedes owners who have trusted us with their vehicles the last 5 years. The Star Automotive Independent Mercedes-Benz Service Center can be found in SLO at the corner of Broad and Francis, on the web at starautomotive.com, or by calling 543-STAR. We'll keep the smile on your face and the star on your car.
My name is Ivan Ulz, and when I'm not singing Fire Truck, hey, I'm the host of the Treasure Ivan Radio Hour, a weekly program featuring my voluminous collection from the golden age of children's records. From Woody Guthrie to Daffy Duck, I have songs and stories that your grandmother listened to when she was a little girl, and she listened to them over and over. So tune in, and don't forget to bring the kids. I'm on 105 Saturday afternoons, and again on Sunday at 405 on KYNS 1340.
Central Coast. Charter Telephone is now available in your neighborhood, and now's the time to enjoy the savings for yourself.
Hello, simplicity.
There's no new equipment to buy. You use the same phone and phone jacks, and of course you keep the same home phone number.
Hello, savings.
Charter Telephone includes unlimited nationwide calling, so it's just as easy to call across town as it is across the country.
Hello, value.
Our plans come with 10 of the most popular features, including caller ID and call waiting. It's like your current phone service in every way, only better. And when you bundle Charter Telephone with Charter Digital Cable and high-speed internet, the savings only get better with one low monthly bill. So what are you waiting for? Answer the call. Charter Telephone is here. Find out more at charter.com or call 1-866-608-4134. Service is not available in all areas. Unlimited long-distance calling includes U.S., Canada, and Puerto Rico. Restrictions apply. Offer ends 12/31/07. Call 1-866-608-4134 for details.
You're back with Bill and with Mike. I thank you for joining us today for this discussion. I think what we've... I don't know. I have beat this around in my head all weekend, and having Mike here to talk about it here for the last hour and a half, it just strikes me so that it's not a solvable problem. No. It just does not seem to be a solvable problem. I mean, I just can't see how it's solvable for the United States if we want to continue to live the way we do. It's solvable. I mean, people in the Soviet Union very rarely had guns. People in China rarely have guns.
Yeah, but the crime rate and the death rate in both of those countries is still astronomical. Yeah,
it is. Yeah. All right. Mike was addressing a thought during the break that we had about how many people this is going to affect.
Yeah, we've got 12 people dead, 58 people wounded. So we've got 70 people right there that, you know, that we're looking at that are immediately affected. But then we think about all, you know, the brothers, the sisters, the mothers, the dads, the cousins, the uncles, the close friends, the relatives that would have been. We've got a guy that was there with his fiance, and she was murdered, and he's still going on, and what's going to happen with him. We've got a mother that lost her child and is going to be paralyzed for the rest of her life in all likelihood, and all the things that are going to be affected with that. And as soon as the hoopla of the media goes down, those people will be forgotten. Those are the people that will be affected for the rest of their lives and their relatives' lives.
Yeah, and it's going to last a long time.
Yeah.
You know, it's a hurt that's going to last a long, long time. You know, you hear about this, and I'm a person that totally doesn't believe in this whatsoever, and that's closure. You can, if something's a mystery to you, that you can finally, somebody says, okay, here's why the guy did it. So they find that's the only closure you could possibly have, if you want to call it that. But you find out why the guy did it, and he's either a nut or he's angry or whatever he is, and I don't really believe that that helps you. Yeah. I don't help you. You know, in wartime, what helps you when you're at war is you basically learn to just block out your feelings.
Right.
But sadly, that's why you got all these guys with PTSD. You know,
exactly.
And that's the downside of that, is if you block all your feelings out, it's because, you know, it's one of those things where you have to kind of keep going. You know, and the cumulative amount of people that you know that have been killed or wounded as you go longer and longer into a year of battle is huge. And these guys coming back from Afghanistan now, they've, you know, 2, 3, 4 tours of duty.
Right.
It's like craziness to me, just crazy.
Yeah.
And their life is even more affected, I think, because, and I've mentioned this, you know, if you were in the Second World War, you went till it was over.
Right.
You knew it. Vietnam, you went for a year. I ended up a year and 2 weeks, but okay, fine. So they screwed me a little bit. But anyway, you end up for a year. So you say, okay, I have this amount of time in my head, and I'm going to be here for the whole year, and then I'm going to be home. Now, you could take R&R if you'd been there at least, I think, 6 months, and you were married. You could take R&R in Hawaii, and you could meet your spouse in Hawaii. A lot of guys didn't do it. Because the idea was, get your year over. Just
right.
Get the darn year over. And so, you know, we didn't call home. We didn't have any of that. You were just, except for mail, you were isolated from the United States for a year. Then you have these young guys today that they'll even go for 6 months, come home for a couple of weeks, then go back for 6 months. Then come home for a half a year, then go back for 6 months, and it's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's the thing that's never ending, and that I cannot understand at all. And I mean, you can really look at that just right off the top of your head and think, that's got to be one of the biggest reasons for all the suicide.
Sure.
Because of the fact that, what are you feeling? I mean, constantly, where are you at? Where's your mindset?
Yeah.
Where's your... The whole bit.
Yeah.
And once you finally get yourself back into feeling that you're here, home, safe, whatever, then you're called up for another tour of duty in Afghanistan or wherever in the heck it might be, and they're going to be shooting at you again. And you don't know who your friends are. You don't know who your
well, yeah, and you have to try to somehow get in. How do you get into civilian mode in 2 weeks and be with your family and then say, okay, now I got to get out of that? But and I'm sure they don't get into civilian mode.
No.
I'm sure they stay in combat mode. But here they are, the United States, you know, and I would imagine they're not relating well at all when they're here for a couple of weeks. And then even then, if you have to even be here 6 months. Combat mode takes a long time to get out of you.
Yeah.
I mean, it really does. You know, when the in the Vietnam War, when the Marines came home, they actually had to go to Camp Pendleton for, I think it was 3 days, which was I felt very bad for them that they had to. They felt bad for themselves they had to. But they, you know, were so trained to, you know, kill people that they thought that the smartest thing they could do was at least give them 3 days. And I don't know what they – I've never asked a Marine what they did in those 3 days to desensitize them or sensitize them.
Right.
But supposedly they did something.
Now you take that. At least those people that are in the military had been given training to the fact of this is what to expect, although I don't think anybody could ever really expect – what they're going to feel, what's going to happen, the whole bit until they're actually in the situation. But then you've got hundreds of people that all of a sudden somebody starts shooting and throwing the gas grenades and the whole bit. And these people don't have anything behind them to make them think of what to do, how to react, how to feel.
You're going to jump up and scream and try to run. I mean, that's what that's your instinct is to flee.
And those terror thoughts that a veteran has when he comes or she comes home from the war, this is the same type of feeling that these people, a lot of these people will have waking up in the sweats and with the nightmares and the whole bit for how many years after this occurs?
Yeah, the other thing that, you know, and that's another thing that should be said here. You know, this trauma is more than, you know, this kind of a trauma is more than just, well, somebody's lost somebody else.
Right.
It's the people that have gone through it. And I want you to know they are traumatized.
Yeah.
And again, and you don't know how long that's going to last because this was, I mean, how amazingly shocking such a thing is to see 70 people being shot, killed, and when they're and you're one of them was lucky to get away.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's it just is going to go on forever.
Yeah.
That's really amazing. And like you said, you think of the number of people that are affected by it. You know, they're close to you, they're friends of yours that are everything.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I mean, you think about the people that are young that are going to be married and still having this in the back of their heads that for some reason something sparks that, you know, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, and their husband or their wife are just, or their kids, just what has happened to mom?
And you know what else is going on here, too, that I feel very bad about because we had a similar situation where I was? You now have really, and this is even worse here because it's where you live, it's the United States. You've lost a sense of security. It's gone. You will never have it back. It
right.
is gone. Goodbye. It's not coming back. I'm sorry. You're not going to get it back.
It's like my house was robbed when I was down in Los Angeles. And that sense of loss of everything.
Violation.
Yeah, the violation that somebody came into your place, into your safety, and just totally took everything away from you. That you no longer feel safe in your house. That you no longer feel safe leaving anything in that house. That you want to do what you can to get that feeling back. And all that there is time to eventually get that feeling back.
But it's going to take a lot of time for some of these people because
everywhere
they go out, anytime they're with anywhere out, I don't care where they have a restaurant, any place they're in public, they're going to be nervous.
Yeah, they're going to be feeling if somebody pops the cork on champagne, somebody that's making the flambé gets it in smoke, you know, anything along that line.
You bet.
Oh.
And the unit that I was in, we were tied up to ships. You know, we operated off the Mekong River, and it was called the Mobile Marine Base. And so we operated, we're tied up next to these ships. Well, in November of 68, the LST, Winchester County, was mined. We had run out of concussion grenades, which we dropped all day long, but we had run out of them. And to tell you how patient the North Vietnamese were, they waited for that day. They waited for a day that that might happen. They sent swimmers out. They put 200-300-pound charges against the side of the LST, killed 26 guys in one swipe, you know, and just blew the crap out of that ship. Luckily, it stayed afloat because the guys on the boats knew enough about damage control to keep the dying ship afloat till they could beach it. But the thing that happened with that was it took away your safe haven. Right. Yeah, we always felt safe. You weren't always safe on the ships. I mean, every now and then they'd fire a wild rocket at you, or they'd send a mortar your way, or whatever, you know. But it was never anything that you really worried about. But now,
but that was the now one you, place. Yeah,
now you
felt
had no
you
place to
relax.
Go. You had no place to go. Now it was like that was spooky. And I have to tell you, when they took that away, it was really hard.
Yeah.
You know. To this day, the lucky thing of that is, of course, it's not nothing's really lucky, but the interesting thing is they LSTs, like other Navy ships, have watertight compartments. There was a floating barrack ship called the APL. It was an Army ship, and the Army guys were on. There was about 200 Army guys on that floating barracks and had no watertight bulkheads at all. If they had done it to that boat, that barracks, it would have gone down and that within the 200 people.
Right.
So it was just a thing. So these people now that have to go out in public and have to try to deal with all that, it's just going to be huge for them. It's going to be just hard.
Yeah, the closest thing that I can relate to this is I have a sister and brother-in-law that their 5-year-old child died of a disease. And there is not a day goes by that they don't think about him several times a day. And the only thing is, my sister-in-law, this last Christmas, we took her somewhere, and she said this was the first time she laughed at Christmas, and she felt guilty about it. Think of how many people are going to feel that way for a long time because of what happened.
Plus, if you look at this event, what it's done to the psyche of all of us generally.
Right.
You know, I mean, people, anybody that's, you know, a human being or approaching one, you know, you're going to have these really sad feelings about, you know, what's happened and be horrified by it and be repulsed by it and be all of that stuff. And that's not going to go away right away for everybody either.
No.
You know, and this guy, they said it could be a year before this guy actually goes to trial.
Oh, so yeah. It's going to be a month before they even bring the full charges against him and stuff. So
be prepared. You know. Be prepared for something that something that's finally overridden the political campaign of two men.
Right.
And now we're going to hear about this from now on.
Think about, you know, all the people that are going to have the guilt that comes into their heads. Why did I survive? Why wasn't I shot? Why whatever? Just
always there, survivor's guilt.
Yep.
It happens, and these people will suffer that too. Mike, I thank you for taking the time to come in today. I thank you for joining Mike and I, and I wish you a very nice afternoon.
Keep smiling, keep shining, knowing you can always count on me. For sure, that's what friends. Keep shining, knowing you can always
This is Talk is Cheap.
The game is over.
The Friends and Neighbors Network.
Game over.
With Bill Benica.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then.
Happy trails.
Just in